Hey there, you're listening to The Culture is Black, a quarterly podcast series dedicated to spotlighting Black businesses and Black creatives. This show is brought to you by Cork, the UK's leading influencer, intelligence and digital trend forecasting agency. I'm Jennifer Adetoro, a culture writer and journalist. For so long, Black businesses and Black creatives have set the tone of wider mainstream culture. Now in 2020 and the decade ahead, we as a society are having bigger conversations about the need for equity for Black talent. This podcast aims to facilitate some of these much-needed conversations, all while showcasing the rising talent, the entrepreneurs, and the trailblazers who deserve the spotlight. Throughout the series, I'll be your host, but I won't be doing it alone. You'll be hearing from other journalists who will be taking part in hosting the conversation. So, let's get into it. In today's episode, we'll be looking at the world of music. I'll be honest with you guys, it's been a tough one for me. I'm a big live concert and festival goer, and the music industry has really taken a hit. The pandemic has resulted in the cancellation of numerous world tours and high-profile festivals such as Glastonbury and Coachella. The nightlife scene, a multi-million industry, is predicted to lose 70% of its workforce by the end of the year. In response, a petition called Let Us Dance was launched, calling for the UK government to extend its financial support of the nightlife industry. It has since received over 100,000 signatures, meaning it will be considered for debate in Parliament. I wanted to gain some insight about what's been happening to this industry from the people in it and affected by it. So I got the chance to speak to some truly talented people in this space, and first up is BBC One Extra presenter and DJ, Jam Supernova. She's also the founder of the record label and club night Future Bounce. I caught up with her over Zoom and spoke to her a bit about her own brand and also got some of her thoughts on the future of nightlife post-COVID. And with that, here's the first interview. Hope you enjoy.
Well, thank you, Jams, for being here.
No worries.
Let's talk about your start on the Ronnie Harrell show and what it's been like going from an intern to having your own show on BBC One Extra.
Yeah, I mean, I started on Ronnie's show so long ago. I started as an intern at BBC on One Extra. So I think I was 19 years old. It was the summer that I was 20 that year. And then, yeah, after that, when I came back as a sort of a freelance assistant producer, I got a little moment to have on Ronnie Harrell's show where I would do the R&B news. Mm. And that was amazing because it was like, yeah, he was really open to having my voice on air. And it, you know, I was making these packages. I used to love radio editing. I was making these like packages of sound effects and things like that. And it taught me a lot about actually presenting, because like my producer would be at the time, like I'd be like, you know, so-and-so died. And they're like, when you do that, maybe just bring your voice down a little bit, like, you know, like learning the range and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it was just all little moments to kind of help the One Extra listener kind of get to know me, so that when I did get a show like 5 years later, it wasn't someone, you know, kind of this voice out of nowhere. There was a sort of story.
Yeah. And how would you say that radio has like changed since like your early beginnings to now?
Mm. Some people will say the importance of radio has changed. I don't know if I believe that, because especially during a period of what we've just been through, the pandemic, radio has never been as important for getting people through. Mm. But I think that there's a lot more competition that's happened over the last, you know, 10 years. Like 10 years ago, my mum had a Spotify account and she was the only person I knew of a Spotify account. Mm. You know, now everybody has a Spotify account or an Apple account. So there's a lot more competition. And I think actually what's changed is the way that people release music. Mm. So before, you know, we would be able to break an artist on the radio simply by playing their songs, whereas now there's so much saturation. One, that can't happen. But two, you know, artists now have bigger social medias than ever. They talk to their audience directly. So rather than being the focal point of an artist campaign, become like part of the ecosystem of the little boxes that they need to tick along the way. So I kind of see my journey as not breaking someone, but more adding awareness. So it's like me playing your record again, me getting you on the show, me having you in session. It's that journey. So now I'm part of your journey and you're part of mine on radio. So the audience is getting to know you a little bit more each time. So I think that's definitely changed. Obviously, I think the way that we listen to radio has changed, like how long we listen to radio, where we listen to radio. And for a lot of people now, they might go to a playlist or they might pick a certain show that they want to listen to. Everyone has more choice now. So whereas before you could only get listen back to the iPlayer, you know, on your laptop, but now you've got it as an app. So I think people just have more choice, which I think is a good thing. I mean, I still think radio is really important, but I think it's just changed in the role that we play in people's lives and in the music industry.
Yeah. And like going back to what you were saying about, you know, raising awareness of artists, would you say you're kind of doing that with your label Future Bounce?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, that's been my whole kind of like objective as a, what I've seen the label as. It's like a launch pad for artists. Because obviously I get sent so much music and I go through so much music every single week. And there's so many artists that I've been supporting, you know, as soon as I came across them on SoundCloud. And I'm still supporting them now. And in my head, I'm like, why are you not bigger? I think you're amazing. Why do people not know about you? And obviously you can't do that for every artist, but there are some artists that you have that pull and that need. You're like, right, I want to be the person to shine a bigger light on you. And with the label, you know, I have a little hand in the A&R process because I enjoy that. But essentially, me running a label was giving you my contacts.
Yeah.
You know, and that is that kind of trade-off. You know, I'm going to put you here. I'm going to hit up my radio friends here. It's being able to get that artist things that would have taken them a little bit longer to get themselves.
Yeah. It's pretty much like, I feel like music has now developed into that. Like, obviously not to include and bring up Drake, but just how, you know, bigger artists, and even Beyonce with, you know, Black is King, just being able to incorporate new talent, even if it's, you know, not in a big way, but in a much smaller way, and just giving them that exposure is very, very important in the music scene nowadays.
Yeah.
And kind of going back to, you know, BBC One Extra, how do you feel about it as a whole, especially, you know, it being one of the first national radio stations dedicated to Black music and talent in a way, in terms of how, you know, it kind of profiles its presenters and its DJs?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was like a no-brainer, like where I wanted to start my career. And it had been such a goal and a dream for me since I was 17 years old. And I got a DAB, basically. I got given a Freeview box. And I used to listen to Choice back when it was, before it was Capital Extra. Yeah. I used to listen to Choice. And I did enjoy Choice and I did really like it. But as soon as I heard One Extra, I was like, oh my God, this is so unapologetic. Like, you had like Ace and Viz doing the Drive Time show. And there was just more, it was just more than just playing music. It was culture as well. And I think that when you listen to like Choice, it was very music driven and very fast paced, but you never really got to know the presenters. But I thought up on One Extra, all these presenters were just being themselves, which was Black, which was amazing. But they was talking about the things around the music. You know, I think it's probably BBC, I think it's probably one of their biggest assets that they have a Black station. Do you know what I mean? Regardless of the reach in comparison to the other stations, but the BBC is there to serve people. Mm-hmm. And it's there to serve people that aren't being served as well. And I think that One Extra has done that over the years. And it's interesting now because I think we went through a stage of, I guess, just by default, you get more popular, you get more palatable, you maybe drop off the Black music. And now I think in light of everything that's happened, I think it's made the station remember that we are a Black music station. And we shouldn't be scared to say Black on air.
Yeah.
Because, you know, actually a lot of our listeners are actually white. You know, the average probably listener is a white person, probably a white male in his 30s. Yeah. But who we are there to serve, it should always be at the forefront. Not to say those people can't listen. By all means, come and listen, come enjoy the culture. So we've actually kind of gone back now to being like, this is a Black music station. This is Black. This, you know, and that feels good to me. That makes me feel like, you know, I'm in the right place, because we shouldn't be scared to say Black. And I remember kind of like some of the early times I was on air when I got my show originally on the weekends. I think I'd say something like Black related and maybe get like a backlash on text or something. And I was just like, I don't care, because I'm talking about my lived experience. I think I said something like basically along the lines of how I wanted to watch a film. My boyfriend, he's white, but I tried to put it on and he just didn't get any of the jokes. And I was like, you know what? Let's park this and I'm just going to watch it with my best friend. And I was like, not all shows are for everybody. Yeah. And then someone tweeted in like, did Jam Supernova just say that she only wants to watch Black films with her Black friends? And I was like, yeah, I did. I tried it. It didn't work. I'll try it again in the future, but, you know, preference wise, I'd rather watch it with her.
Exactly. And you're just speaking your truth, and there's nothing wrong about that.
Like,
every other kind of, you know, radio presenter can do that on a more mainstream station.
Yeah.
And they're not kind of, you know, criticized for it.
Because that's the norm. Yeah, that's their norm. And now I could probably say this on One Extra, and now we wouldn't get that backlash, because now we're being explicit in who we are. My show is very, like, I had a nice email from someone actually the other day just saying like, oh, I'm really thankful for your show and the fact that it's such a Black empowerment show. And that's just me being me. I didn't have meant it to be that show.
Yeah.
That's just who I am.
So where would you say the shift kind of came from then? Like, what kind of caused the shift?
Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
George Floyd. Yeah. That, I think that was a big catalyst for a lot of people, a lot of brands. But for us as a station, it was a massive catalyst. And we were the only station that could do something like we did around it. So we did a Blackout Tuesday. The whole day we broadcasted was all you know, black music, black empowerment music, black painful music. We had a big speech show that went out with Shawnee B and Ace, which was like a 2-hour long speech program about their lived experiences as black men. And then I did a show off the back of it, like a special. So I did a 3-hour show that spoke to pain, to protest and to peace. And no other station, I don't think anywhere, could have been as explicit as that.
Yeah. And with like clubs closed and festivals postponed and like events like Notting Hill Carnival going online, how do you feel like the pandemic is affecting nightlife and like, you know, music events in general, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's bulldozed through it. It's pulled it to a complete standstill. And that is sad because I don't know how it will come back. And I know it will come back. I just don't know how it will come back. I think it looks uncertain. At one point, we will all be raving together, hugging in a sweaty club one day again. I do believe that. But I can't tell you when that will be. And I think that's the hardest pill to swallow. And I think most DJs will tell you, or most live acts will tell you, whilst we miss DJing, whilst we miss being on stage, whilst we miss having those moments, I think people's safety outweighs that. Mm. You know, I've just been filming a documentary, BBC Three, that's going out at the end of August, and it's about clubbing post-COVID. And I spoke to DJs, promoters, venue owners, and newly started online parties to see how everyone is coping. And I think that the main thing for everybody that has come out of it is about people's safety.
Mm.
Yes, we've lost a lot, and yes, it is sad, and but it's about their safety and it's about adapting, you know. So I think at the moment, for summer at the moment, you're going to still be able to find a vibe because there's a lot of courtyard parties, venues are using their car parks and, you know, trying to make best of what they can do. I know when you go to those parties, you can't dance, you can't stand up, you've got to stay on your table.
Yeah, you've got to sit down.
yeah. But it's a start, it's something. And I went out on Friday night as part of the doc, actually, to actually go out in the end. Mm-hmm. And it was, oh, I loved it. I had the best time ever.
Where did you go?
I went to Brixton Jam, their courtyard sessions with a DJ called Sherelle, who's also in the doc. So the conclusion was like, I did go out. It was different, but I went out. So yeah, I mean, who's to know? Because also the other sort of things you're going to have is how many clubs will be able to stay open. Let's say when it goes to winter and you want to put on shows, but the capacity is going to have to be halved. You know, it takes a lot of money to keep a club open. Then if you've ever done a night and I've only had one night, club night, that didn't do well. And it was like, got to like maybe 1 a.m. It was meant to go until 4, and they were just like, yeah, pull the plug. Because they're losing money every minute they stay open and the club is empty. And it was heartbreaking, but I get it. So yeah, I think that's going to have a knock-on effect capacity. I also think having a lower capacity means you're going to have to have an increase in tickets.
Mm.
Then who is going to be able to rave? Are we getting even more elite? I think raving has become elite over the years, but we'll be getting more elite. Or will there be a positive out of it? And it might mean that, okay, maybe they start booking local talent. Maybe they start giving the smaller person a go. Maybe it's not about big, shiny headline names anymore, you know? So I think there's positives and negatives to take from the situation, but I think it's take it a day-by-day situation right now.
Yeah. And like, how have you felt like doing, you know, online live streams, just gigs on live?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's just weird because I thrive off of people's reaction so much, and not having anyone there can sometimes make you feel like, especially if you feel like the mix isn't going well, you start to get inward yourself. You're like, oh God, you know, and then before you know it, you've lost the vibe and you've lost the connection, even if it's through a screen. And then you listen back and you're like, oh my God, that was fine. Why didn't I just have fun when I was in it? But I've really enjoyed making mixes.
Okay.
I just had time to like, you know, really like up my skills on the decks or come up with different blends and really kind of refound my identity, because I definitely felt a bit lost as a DJ last year. I didn't know what I wanted to play. I knew what I didn't want to play, but I didn't have the freedom to explore where I wanted to go. So I just felt a bit lost. Like, I just didn't enjoy the festival season. I kind of felt like I bombed quite hard. And then I had the opportunity to do some traveling towards the end of the year, end of 2019, the beginning of 2020. And that just like reinvigorated me, like, as a DJ, to go somewhere and just play whatever I wanted. There's no expectation. They didn't really know who I am. I might see my name on a poster. They didn't really know. So I could play whatever I wanted. And that freedom has kind of helped me refine my sound. So now when I'm going online and I'm doing the live streams, I'm playing who I am. By the end of this year, it's going to be very clear what my DJ identity is. Whereas I think the other years it had been quite muddled. So yeah, I mean, I think the boom of online DJing has slowed down a lot. But for me, it's kind of made me think, you know, I do a monthly mix called Club Jams. my mixed cloud every month. It's just literally like the best club music that I found that month. But I filmed it one day and I put it up on YouTube. I haven't promoted it or nothing. I just sort of put it there. But I'm like, yeah, why don't I just film them?
Yeah.
Why not film them as well? So that's, it's given me new ideas, I'd say.
Yeah. And I feel like if you film them, it just kind of goes back to the whole idea of, you know, being in like a boiler room set or, you know, like a pirate studio set or, you know, where a lot of the time it's just the DJ and the camera. Well, I guess there is a crowd behind them, but there's still that, you know, that close proximity between the camera and the DJ and just them being in their element.
Yeah, I don't like mixing on IG Live. I haven't enjoyed that. And do you know why? It's because people don't stay. They come and go.
Yeah, I can't lie. I do that.
Yeah, I know I do it as well. I leave rapidly. But as a DJ, you're like, it's like someone, it's the exact same feeling. It's like you're being, you go on to do your DJ set. Maybe you play something a little couple and then you clear the dance floor. It's the same feeling when you see the numbers dropping out of IG. You're like, ah, they're leaving. What can I, how can I keep them here? It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah, but you know what it is? It's not because it's a live stream. It's more because I prefer YouTube as a platform to watch DJs perform rather than Instagram. And how do you see the future of like radio and music kind of evolving in this space as a whole?
I mean, it's a tricky one. You know, I still see radio completely keep on going. I don't think we'll be driven as much as like linear listening, like listening at these specific times that we used to, because actually you noticed in lockdown, people's linear listening changed. Their whole schedules were changed. So the more people that work from home or the more people that are more freelance and the more people that, you know, I don't know, drive different cars or have different technology and phones, I think the way that you listen to radio, we will have to adapt. And I think it's more content driven. It's more choice driven, like I kind of mentioned before. And it's maybe radio isn't just what you listen to. You know, we watch Breakfast Club. People watch it. Yeah, people listen to it, but a lot of people watch it. So I think it's for us at radio, it's about thinking about the different ways that we can still be radio, but people can check us out as well in different platforms. And I think like with the music industry, I really hope for the future, actually, that all these pledges of inclusivity and, you know, all these conversations that we've been having, especially looking at the way that artists have been really hit with the lack of gigs and stuff like that, that we kind of move towards a fairer system, a fairer, more transparent system. I mean, major labels aren't going anywhere and neither should they. They're part of the ecosystem. But I think it's, you know, I think a lot of artists are going to kind of now have to really think about the way that they make money as well.
Yeah.
Because it can't just be driven to live. And I think Bandcamp's been really good for that during this period of time, because artists are like, oh, I can make real cash money on Bandcamp. Yeah. And you've got artists that were like never putting their music on Bandcamp and now all over it because it is direct to consumer. And what I've been thinking about a lot actually is, I love fitness and I use a lot of like I was doing during lockdown, I was on YouTube doing a lot of fitness stuff. And then I came across this girl on Instagram called Kira London.
Oh, yeah.
And she's huge. Like during lockdown, she smashed it. So she set up this basically like virtual gym where you pay £15 a month and you get access to a private Instagram and you get 4 classes a day. And she's got, you know, it's £15 a month. She's got over 9,000 people in this private group. She's made money during lockdown. Yeah. And that's inspiring to me. But it's also inspiring about looking at the fitness model. They managed to back that direct to consumer. So they're going to give you something for free, slightly. You might go and get that free YouTube class. You might get that free IG. And then they might do it another time, another time. Like, right, if you like this, now come and pay for it, because I've made you get to know me and I made you you like it. I'm going to do it at a rate that feels, you know, comfortable for you. It's not out of the ordinary, out of the questionary. And people are going to pay you directly for your service.
Yeah.
Whereas the music industry, everything is third party.
Yeah.
Everything is third party. You have to get paid through Spotify first, get paid through Apple, get paid through big promotion companies before the artist ever sees their money.
Yeah.
And by the time it gets to them, you know, it's not as much as we assume. Obviously, for your Beyoncé's, that's different, but she's made a lot of money from branding, you know. But for your average artist, their Spotify isn't what's going to make them money. And, you know, there's been a lot of sort of talk about how much Spotify pays and the head of Spotify saying, well, artists should just release more music. You know, which I think is really, really unfair, because without the artist, there is no Spotify.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So I think I really hope that artists start to think about how they can directly hit their consumer.
Yeah.
How can you've learned how to speak to them directly on social media. How do you now get them directly to pay for your art? And it's a hard one because, you know, not everyone's going to pay £15 per month for per artist that they like. So it's finding a system that works. But I do think you know, we can pay a little more for the music. You know, I go on Bandcamp a lot and purchase a lot of music. I think we should need to give artists more credit for what they give to the world, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like, my way of always kind of contributing was by going to gigs a lot. And obviously that's not a thing. So now I'm trying to be a bit more conscious and actually, you know, try and, you know, purchase music from Bandcamp.
Or purchase their merch. So, yeah, I really hope that we look at a world where we don't have to keep on going through third party platforms, or not just platforms, but, like, you know, third party for the artist to get paid.
Yeah.
Because for Keira London, whilst the platform that she's using is Instagram, the payments are going directly to her, you know? And I think, it'd be amazing to maybe get to a place where that happens. But yeah, I think that, yeah, that's the kind of future I hope. I just hope more conversation. And I think, I really just hope we don't regress.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure how old you are, but I feel like, you know, like, I felt like maybe for a lot of people in the 90s, it felt like a more progressive time, you know, post Nelson Mandela and the apartheid. You know, my mum would have seen people that looked like her on TV, on Top of the Pops. And I feel there was a big period of time where that we regressed and we kept on regressing. So I hope that now we're going to have like an influx of people of all colours, you know, in positions on TV and films. I just hope we don't get to a point where we think, okay, now we can regress again. Like, and we need to see, you know, all these companies, whether it's business, tech, media, music, you need people of colour at the top.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on community radios like NTS Radio and like No Signal Radio.
Oh my God, I'm such a fan. That's where I started. That's where my heart will always be. I love it. Like, I've loved what No Signal have done. I actually got to hang out with Jojo Sanubi, who's one of the founders, for the documentary, actually. And I just was fascinated listening to him talk, you know, because I had my moment on Represent where it was about being part of something and it's about being part of something that was about to take off. And it was exciting. You know, I got to Represent when they were just about to go from online to FM. And I was on Represent when we were on an estate in Peckham underneath. You know, when you've got the Royal Shops and the flats on top?
Yeah.
we were there, you know, and like we were in the thick of it. And we'd be online, then we got the green light to go FM and then raising money and capital and stuff like that. Like, it was part of something. And through that, I was able to be like, I was able to grow with them. So it got to the point in my career where they'd be like, oh, Jam Supernova, Represent Radio. You know, they go together. So I think it's such a great breeding ground. If you look at, you know, how many presenters from your Represent Radio and now on national radio.
Yeah,
it's amazing to see. It's so needed. Even if you look at Rinse, what Rinse have done, Rinse are so integral musically to UK club music. They make genres, they develop genres, they create scenes. We need that. Like, you know, NTS serves an audience that isn't getting served on all those other stations, you know. You need that. You need young creatives to have that outlet and to make radio for them, by them.
Yeah.
So, and I think with No Signal, it's about being a black station for us, by us, but with a younger lens. And I never think that, you know, me being on national radio now is like, what are they doing over there? Like, no way. Like, I think everything's part of like an ecosystem, and like what one station is lacking, another station can provide, and it just keeps on going round. It's like one big circle. All the stations sort of need to be lacking in something for the other one to gain.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all needed. So yeah, I'm always here for community radio, and I think being part of it was some of the best times of my life.
Launched earlier this year in March, No Signal was founded by brothers Jojo and David Shaughnessy during lockdown as an online alternative to their popular party and club night Recess. Through regular shows such as its widely acclaimed music clash, 10v10, No Signal has birthed a cultural movement that highlights yet again the importance of community-led platforms. I caught up with Jojo to talk about the sudden emergence of the station and his advice for brands looking to work with talent in this space.
You're listening to No Signal Radio. Radio. Radio.
Talk us through your creative background and like your journey from like graphic design to essentially running a radio station.
My background is obviously a graphic designer. Started when I was 14 years old, just doing just bits for church. And then I kind of started doing some MySpace stuff as well, like, you know, MySpace layouts. And then like productions for people. And then kind of started to go into like, you know, doing events at ACS at uni, and was just doing posters for that, posters for my own events, and kind of just going on strong from there, really. And how I ended up having a radio station was,
yeah,
it all starts from like just throwing parties, really, because I was throwing parties in uni and in London before we started the party Recess. It was called JoJo's, but we wanted to make it like something more branded, less personal. So then we came up with Recess. And in our second year of Recess, we really wanted to do like a radio show, like our own radio show. So we kind of did it self-hosted, didn't really bang, but we were still learning how to live stream. So with the knowledge of learning how to live stream, which we learned in 2018, like late 2018, we said, okay, like if we can do live stream audio, let's start like a smaller event, offshoot of Recess, but that's just more DJ based. And that was No Signal. So we started No Signal as just like an alternative to the Recess Club Night, which was obviously a bit more mainstream. We wanted to have something that shows the taste of DJs and is more for like music lovers. Do you know what I mean? So it was a bit of fun, but at the same time, a side project. We weren't really focused on it. We was focusing on Recess. But that launched in 2019, like early 2019. But then obviously it was on and off for the whole of 2019. We did like one No Signal stream in Ibiza. Did one in New York as well, like a little party, like bring on bottle kind of thing. But it was this year where everything went to lockdown. It was like, okay, we have a platform already to do live stream DJ sets. So let's just do that. But then I wanted it to be like a something for people to do. That's that when, like, you know, obviously when they've nothing to do, and you're waking up and like, you know, you're on furlough or you're a freelancer and your work is gone and the days become like, okay, what do I do? So I was like, you know what, cool. Let's just try giving people some kind of structure or keep them company with some music or whatever in the mornings and the evenings. So I remember I was just playing music just in the morning saying, yo, you know, patting these couple of DJs. But then we wanted to do some interactive stuff. I've always been interested in, you know, getting that interaction from Twitter because, you know, Twitter is a great place to enjoy content. Like with people, you know, like we see of Love Island, you know, so I've always been interested in that. And I thought that I need to find a way to create a piece of content that would be interactive. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's how we came up with 10v10. And yeah, like that obviously will happen. But in the time that when we had all those people following us and stuff, we took the opportunity to be like, yo, you know what? There's a gap in the market for a radio station. Let's do this thing in it. And then we took the opportunity to do that. And no turning back at all, really.
Yeah. And I feel like No Signal just gives, you know, a similar vibe to other community radios such as like NTS, Rinse, Represent, in that you guys prioritize your network of DJs, presenters, producers, you know, just black talent in general in this case, to kind of put out authentic content that people want to hear. What would you say the whole process is, you know, like sourcing all these, you know, different kinds of talent for the show or for the numerous shows rather?
Well, yeah, like you said, it's like we're privileged to have a good network of peers that are like, you know, great DJs, selectors, hosts, all that stuff, you know what I mean? So immediately we reached out to our network and then we reached out to some people that we knew from afar as well. You know, people that we just kind of like, we saw, we admired, and was like, you know what, maybe it's time for us to finally link up. And then even there's some people that we just stumbled across their content. We were like, you know what, this would be sick on here. Like, you know, would you like to have it on here? And, you know, people were like, yeah, like, they were gas. So it's been quite a nice process, an easy process for us, therefore.
Yeah.
And we just realized there is so much out there as well. Like I was looking at the programming of another station, and I was like, boy, I realised that we're quite ambitious of our programming. There's so many options. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's good though. Like like, especially black people in this instance, like I feel like we have so much going on. We have so many genres. We have so many, like, it can get as niche as it can get. Like within Afrobeat, like Afrobeats, within Afrobeats, there's probably like 10 different genres within that itself in itself. And I feel like it's really good to kind of specialize and create for, you know, those audiences that don't necessarily get that on mainstream radios.
Yeah, 100%, man. Because like there's one thing that can kill people with this misinformation in it, and not knowing the truth. Like, at least, you know, like for example, that whole don't realize that debate that dance will influence Afrobeats today, and it's like,
yeah,
it's a disrespect to the whole history of that corner of West African music. Do you know what I mean? And like, you're erasing it because what you've just been to a couple of clubs and you've heard like songs that sound that same BPM or people speaking with the what's it called, the patois twang, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's not as simple as that, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Like, we can educate people via the station, you know what I mean, with content.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So it's very important for us to keep that level of curation and to keep it as broad as possible, not to, you know, just keep it focused into the mainstream. Because yeah, you're right, there's so much, there's literally so much, you know, the spectrum of Black music is so wide. And we're in a position to try and find it all in it and to share it with everybody as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, for brands that don't necessarily have someone that has connections, like, to you guys,
yeah,
how would you advise them on how to approach and work with, like, talent and creatives in, like, your kind of space?
I think it's just kind of like understanding the nuances of the culture that we exist in, innit? And the culture that we like operate in. Because from my experience right now over the past 2-3 months, like, it's not enough to just be a spectator. Like, you can't say, yeah, I know this is this because I saw it online, I've got a friend. Like, the nuances are the most important part. And like, if you do want to work with a brand that's like, you know, that has a lot of cultural capital, it's like, you have to remember that it is obviously a partnership and not like, oh yeah, you're just giving them money, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they look good, but you look good too.
Mm-hmm.
You can never forget that. Like, as much as they look like, oh yeah, okay, they're doing well, like, it's also a good look for you internally, externally, because people want to be like, oh right, this brand. Like, now, big up, you guys care about, you know, up-and-coming people. But then, obviously, internally, other brands are going to be like, damn, like, they got them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we're in this time right now where it's like people are relying heavily on brands to bring their ideas to life, innit?
Yep.
And it's obviously going to be even more now in this digital space where the cost of things are going to be more higher as well. So it's like, we have to be careful. We don't tip the balance too much where everything becomes a brand event and there's no space for stuff to grow naturally anymore.
Yeah, and be authentic.
You know what I mean? But with the lack of space for events as well, again, it's like, you know, because a lot of things that happen actually start from small spaces, underground spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just about understanding the nuances, but then at the same time, like, on a wider scale, you definitely have to find a balance between everything being a brand event and just let things go naturally. But when for things to go naturally, they need the support in it, and financial support as well.
Yeah.
But then with internet stuff, people are not used to paying for stuff on the internet.
Yep, that's true.
You know, so... Mm.
Yeah. And, you know, moving to my last question. Following, like, you know, recent events, including BLM protests, and just kind of, like, more awareness on how Black creatives are, like, treated differently to non-Black creatives, is there anything in particular that you would like to see change? Like, this can be in general, this can be in terms of brands, in terms of social media. Like, what are your hopes for the future?
I think it would be good for brands to expand on what they think Black culture is,
because
it's really not as simple as just the popular music.
Yeah,
you know, because that popular music is still not just one strand in it. You have the American popular music, you have the African popular music, and then the West Indian popular music as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you participate in any one of those, cool, but that's obviously just the main easy thing to do. What about the other facets of culture, of Black culture that exist in it, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think it'd be good for people to like kind of like open the borders a bit, to actually look for people. I just feel like doing stuff to make for everyone included.
Yeah. But I feel like with No Signal, with Recess, with your platform in general, I feel like platforms like yours, it's more giving kind of like a spotlight on emerging talent, emerging creatives. And that's the kind of part that I like. And brands will want to work with platforms, you know, like you, because I think they realise that they actually do need to work more with emerging talent. They can't be working with, you know, macro influencers all the time. And a lot of brands are making an effort to, you know, work with emerging talent.
Yeah, that's
and it's just great that, you know, we have platforms that actually are like, here we are, we've got loads of DJs, presenters, producers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
It's
that.
Like a stepping stone in a way for them all.
Exactly that.
So hopefully, like, people at No Signal, you know, get to do more stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Get to appear on other radio stations, get to work with brands.
So what we're doing as well is like with like all the people that work in the station, we want to show the world that all the people that we have in the station. So like say that next campaign that we get, we'll use different people. Do you know what I mean? Not just the people that was in the last campaign, you know. And that opens them up. You know, that opens them up to the world and show the diversity and the range. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's good, because I feel like with a lot of platforms, again, it's like it's so easy to be trapped and have like the faces of a brand.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there are the like the main presenters of like, let's say 10v10, for example, that everyone has gotten used to, everyone knows.
Yeah.
But I feel like at the same time, like everyone can still kind of build a brand, build a name for themselves on the station.
Facts.
So I'm glad that you're trying your best to make that happen as well.
Yeah, no, nah, man, it's the only way, man. Otherwise, you're doing people a disservice, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, you got making sure that at least people are content, you know, and are treated well and get a good proportion of the goodies, innit? Because everyone can benefit from it.
Do you think that being in quarantine is going to encourage more people to kind of follow suit in terms of, you know, Signal and NTS Radio and Represent and Rinse?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But why not? I think during lockdown, we've learned so much about technology. The fact that we can do this. We might have been trying to arrange this in real life person for months and it might not have come together. But this is still going to be good content for people to listen to, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what the most important thing is. It's like, you don't have to have the most snazziest mic or the best CDJs or what is the content that you can create, and if it's interesting and it keeps people's attention, who cares if you shot it on an iPhone?
Yeah.
You know, I'm shooting all my DJ sets on iPhones. I am. When I film them, they are, and it's an iPhone on a tripod that's stuck to a mic stand. So it's like, it's so DIY. But I think it's taught us that, yeah, like, but there is a lot of free technology out there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think anyone can now find a way to get around something to make whatever they want to make happen. I think that's important, because that's what keeps the industry like democratized.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think for so long, equipment and what you can afford, spaces to do a podcast, you know, to rent a studio is not cheap.
Yeah, not at all.
Maybe you don't need a studio.
Yeah.
Who knows whether you'll go back to a studio? You might not. You might, but you might not. So yeah, I think it's good.
I think so too. And to be fair, like, I kind of like the authentic sound. Like, I like hearing random bits of noise and a car driving past or stuff like that in content. It just makes it feel a bit more realistic, a bit sometimes. Real,
yeah. And I think we spent so long trying to be too polished, and I think sometimes people think that in order to make something polished means they never start. They strive to make it look so good or sound so good that they never start it.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. Imagine all the ideas that never got off the ground because people were like, oh, I can't make it look like how I want it to look just now.
Yeah, that's so true. That actually brings me to my next question, which was just, you know, following like recent events of BLM protests and, you know, the financial disparity between Black creatives and non-Black creatives, where do you see the future of the music industry and brand collaborations? Like, is there anything in particular you would like to see in terms of like change?
I think just more transparency. Do you know what I mean? Like, who knows what I get paid versus my white counterpart? We could be the exact same size, have the exact same credentials. I don't know if she or he is getting paid more than me. I have no idea. So I definitely think there should be transparency. And I'd love for brands to actually have the conversation. Why did you pay that white influencer more? It's all good saying you're not going to do it now, but really ask yourself, why did you?
Yeah.
Because that was a conversation that was had, and you've booked multiple people. Yeah. And somebody knows that they booked them for different prices. So
yeah,
You know, I feel that we need to have like an honest conversation around that. I think that labels kind of more from a, not necessarily from like a monetary point of view, I think they need to have do more for duty of care, more for protecting the artists' minds and their mental health. That's what I'd like to see. There's no rule book, is there? They just seem to kind of do as and when they feel, to do. 1 minute it's, you know, for the culture, the next minute it's for charity. I don't know. It's really hard. It's kind of not a world that I'm like, I guess, that familiar with. But I think in everything that they do, there needs to be ethical questions asked.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think obviously due to like recent events, it has been really interesting that there are now platforms that are kind of highlighting these disparities, because I feel like before, if, you know, a Black creative kind of brought this up to a brand, they would kind of, you know, ignore it or kind of, you know, overlook it. Whereas now it's like right in your face. So you can't really argue with it.
you know, maybe we wouldn't have had the mind frame to bring it up. Maybe you wouldn't have thought about it. You should have been happy to be on it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe true. If you were the only black person, you'd be like, oh, but I'm on there, you know. I'm representing, but not knowing that
this is change.
Yeah. But not knowing that you're being undercut massively. And like I learned, like, during this period of time to ask, I did actually ask for a pay rise for one of the consultancy work that I do. And it was so weird because I just sit in there one day and I was like, I'm going to ask for a pay rise. I have been doing a lot of work and I have grown as a human. I'm going to ask for a pay rise. Because I was just kind of always sort of at first happy to be there. Then secondly, I was kind of happy to do the bare minimum but still get paid.
Mm-hmm.
But then actually I was like, no, I want purpose. But purpose also needs to come with a bigger paycheck.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I want to be more invested, but I need to be paid more. So I sort of sent this like long email, sort of where I was when I joined the company 4 years ago, where I'm at now, da 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 da. And it was like, no question. Like, oh my God, you haven't had a pay rise since 4 years ago. And I was like, no, what was I meant to ask? I was like, how does this work? I didn't know that people do that. I had no idea. Like, I never, because the BBC is not really like that. Do you know what I mean? You might jump maybe 20 quid every 4 years, but the BBC is obviously, it's, you know, taxpayers' money. So I never learned that you can ask for a pay rise. And then I was like, okay, oh my God, I'm like this. Now I'm going to do my research. So they said, yeah, we'll get your pay rise. We'll come back to you. So I thought, okay, they're going to come back with a figure. I just talked to some people. So I called around some people and I was like, you know, I messaged some people and it was really nice actually. One of the guys I work with, a white guy, said to him, oh, I hope you don't mind me messaging you about, you know, potentially if you don't mind sharing what you're on, your similar job, here's what I'm on. And he called me straight away. He was like, oh, I'm disgusted. That's what you're on. This is what I'm on. And I think you should go for that. And I was like, well, you do actually do quite a lot more than me. And you are there quite a few more days than me. And he's like, well, go for half. And I was like, oh, okay. And yeah, basically, I didn't even have to actually negotiate because they came with what I had in mind anyway. But that was a big lesson, and maybe I wouldn't have had that realization to think about my worth in that way had this movement not happened and these things had not happened.
It was honestly a pleasure to be able to talk to both Jams and Jojo about their platforms and the future of music. The spirit of community seemed to be the key takeaway, especially when we talk about the notion of creating these platforms for us, by us. And I think for brands wanting to work with black creatives in this space, it's important to understand their value, you know, invest in long-term partnerships and amplify the work that they are already doing. So huge thanks again to Jam Supernova and Jojo Shonaby for taking part in today's episode. Please make sure to follow and support both Future Bounce and No Signal Radio. Their details, along with links to what we've discussed, can be found in the show notes. And thank you to everyone who tuned in. If you liked today's episode, then make sure to get involved in the conversation and follow us for more information on Instagram at Cork Studio. We'll be back with a new episode next week where we explore all things fashion. Until then, see you soon and stay blessed.